Welcome to CJMQ 88.9 FM. This is Workings of a Township with your host, Shelby. This week, I'll be talking about the fascinating world of resource development in good old Canada. So, what are resources and how to classify their development from discovery to operations? Now, I talk a lot about resources on the show, but what are resources? A couple weeks ago, on episode 2, I broke down the primary, utility, and resource-based manufacturing sectors, but not the meaning of resources. So natural resources are anything obtained from the environment to satisfy human needs and wants. We extract aspects of the natural environment to produce goods and services. Human values and abilities determine which parts of the environment societies use and benefit from. So, for example, there are 66 minerals that make up a typical computer. 66! Holy schmoly! I'll first talk about the general classes of resource development, and then dive into meaning and procedure of mineral resources and mineral reserves. Exciting, I know! So, there are three general classes of development in which resources exist in. We got potential, we got conditional, and we got current. Dividing them up like this helps us to understand the degree of access that these resources have. So what is a potential resource? Well, a potential resource is one that is only thought to exist. So there is not enough sufficient knowledge to go on to the next step. And this next step is called conditional. And these are resources that are known to exist. But its availability depends on a number of factors. And I'll talk about those factors in a sec. And finally, there are current resources, which are the ones that meet all these factors and yield benefits. So what conditions need to be met for resources to jump from one class to another? For the potential, which are the ones that are only thought to exist, to move to the current, which are the ones that are known to exist, surveying needs to be done. So someone goes out in an area with internal potential and make a geological map of the area using spiffy equipment. Now, I'm really watering down the degree of complexity that this stage has. This stage can also be known as a stage of exploration. Looking for potential resources is like looking for a needle in a haystack. It's pretty tricky. But once they have enough information about a potential resource, more elaborate exploration can be conducted to confirm possible deposits. So if there is a deposit that is confirmed, then there is a long process of making that mineral deposit a conditional one. To make a resource conditional, it needs to meet at least three really important factors, which I referenced to a moment ago. So the first condition is to make sure that the technology is advanced enough to process the mineral in market form. So for example, the vast oil and gas deposits in the Beaufort Sea in between the Yukon in Alaska, contain about 56 trillion cubic feet of natural gas and 8 billion barrels of oil. In 2016, the Trudeau and Obama administrations enforced a 5-year moratorium on oil and gas exploration, which means freezing of conditions on all existing licenses and no more issuing of new oil and gas licenses for exploration and drilling in Arctic offshore areas. One of the reasons for this temporary prohibition, only one of them, was because of the lack of technological integrity. The Arctic's environment is very hostile, and an oil spill would have catastrophic effects on the Arctic-sensitive ecosystem, since the technology is not advanced enough to conduct an effective clean up. The second factor is political and legal conditions that affect the extraction of minerals. So these are concerns that are applicable to government jurisdictions such as health, labor, environmental standards. One very common concern for investors, which I'm sure you've all heard about before, is called red tape. Now, red tape refers to excessive regulations or formal rules that are considered redundant or bureaucratic and hinders or prevents actions for decision making. So, for example, Bill C-69 has been very controversial when it comes to developing the pipelines in Canada. Bill C-69 is a piece of legislation designed to improve how the federal government assesses and approves major development projects, such as the pipeline. In 2019, the bill was passed in Parliament. It replaced the National Energy Board with a new Canadian Energy Regulator. It also altered the federal environmental assessment process, which will now be reviewed by a new impact assessment agency. Numerous industries and businesses have expressed concerns that this new legislation will drive away investment in Canada by making it difficult to approve major projects like the pipeline. Others have argued that the bill will benefit investment since previous environmental assessments had not gained public trust and results in court battles such as the lawsuits against the Trans Mountain Pipeline or the federal government for not having sufficient environmental standards and consultations practices with Indigenous people regarding its construction. The third factor is needed for a conditional class to jump to a current class is that the resource deposit needs to be economically feasible to extract. They need to measure whether economic gain outweighs production costs. They do this by measuring things such as processing and transportation costs in relation to the current market prices. If operation costs exceed financial returns, then operations will eventually cease. For example, have you ever heard of the town called Pine Point? It was a town built on the north side of the Great Slave Lake in the Northwest Territories, but it no longer exists today. It was a single resource town, which means that it was built only to support the operations of the Pine Point mine, which produced zinc and lead. The mine and town existed from 1964 until 1988. The main reason why the mine closed down was because of economic downturn and high operation costs. So, for example, they had to dig deeper to get to the lead and zinc. The deeper they dug, the more groundwater would flow in, and larger pumps were used to keep the pit dry. By the mid-1980s, electrical bills ran high because of these pumps. These bills, plus the already high operation costs and low market prices for these minerals, caused its operations to halt. It was no longer economically feasible to continue operations of the mine. And with that, the town had no reason to exist. It sounds bleak, but that is the reality of the vulnerabilities of resource towns. It's the boom and the bust cycle of primary industries, especially primary industries, that determine these types of towns' relevance. So once technological integrity, political assent, and economic feasibility has been checked off and production has started, then conditional resources can be classed as current resources. Yet the status of development doesn't just go one way. It is also reversible. Mineral reserves can go from current to conditional and back to current again. For example, even though the town of Pine Point has degraded beyond recognition, there is still signs of life. Osisko Metals, the owners of the mine, did an updated mineral resource estimate of the mine in 2019. It suggests that it is feasible enough to open it up again, and they hope to begin operations as early as 2023. They would focus on mining zinc, which is used to protect steel and iron from rusting. The National Association of Corrosion Engineers found that rusted infrastructure projects like bridges cost about $2.7 trillion worldwide. This is a potential opportunity that they hope to capitalize on. But one of the concerns that the CEO of Osisko Metals expressed was about the United States elections in 2020. So the trade war between China and the United States has made zinc prices unstable. He hopes that a new administration will replace Trump's, since his international policies create uncertainty in the markets and uncertainty for investors. This is another example of how political factors can determine the availability of resources. Now, I'd also like to get into the differences between mineral resources and mineral reserves. Even though they sound the same, they are different. I know I have used them incorrectly in the past, so I'd like to clarify their differences. So mineral reserves are the portion of mineral resources that are economically feasible to produce and sell. So imagine the tar sands in Alberta. They are about 140,000 square kilometers, which is bigger than England, not all of Britain, but just England. This space represents mineral resource. This 140,000 square kilometers of mineral resources has about 1.8 trillion barrels of crude bitumen. So it's pretty big, but that doesn't mean all of the area is being mined. Now, only a slice of that has economically feasible reserves, which was calculated to be 166 billion barrels out of 1.8 mineral resources. So you can think of mineral resources as a big pie. And the mineral reserves are the slice of that pie, which is recoverable, so which is economically feasible to put in production. Now, when it comes to the oil sands, only about 3% of it is being surface mined. The rest is recovered by being pumped to the surface through a technique called in situ. Both mineral resources and mineral reserves are subdivided in order of increasing confidence. Even resources have egos. They resemble the movement from one resource class to another, as already described. Now, it's important to keep in mind that there are numerous ways of describing and categorizing resource development. I have and will be talking about some of those ways. When it comes to mineral resources, so think of the whole pie, it can be subdivided into three categories: inferred, indicated, and measured. Inferred mineral resources is where the content of the resource is estimated with low level of confidence as to whether it is viable or not. It is based on information from techniques like trenches, pits, drill holes, which are only limited information on the quality or reliability of the resource. Now, indicated resources is the next step, and it's confidence building step. This step is about analyzing the samples more in depth by grading their physical characteristics in order to see if they have economic worth. The last step under mineral resource is for them to be measured. This is when a competent geologist has declared that the samples have a high degree of confidence. So they have desirable physical characteristics and their occurrence is adequate enough to be considered a mineral reserve. So once a deposit has been inferred, indicated, and measured by geologists, it can move to the next step of being categorized as a mineral reserve. Mineral reserves are subdivided in order of increasing confidence into probable mineral reserves and proven mineral reserves. Mineral reserves are resources known to be economically feasible for extraction. So think of the slice out of the big pie of mineral resources. They need to take into account the price of processing, economic climate, marketing, legal, environmental, and government factors. A probable reserve will consider those conditions and calculate that there is about a 50 to 90% likelihood that the reserve can be recovered, while a proven reserve has a 90-plus percent chance of being developed. So even though it is a mineral reserve, that doesn't mean it will be recovered. The probable or proven mineral reserves illustrates that the level of confidence in which they could be recovered, but their recovery ultimately depends on other external factors. Well, folks, I hope you had as much fun as I had talking about the fascinating world of resources. So I'd like to leave you with a song from the Dead South called Diamond Ring. In the song, there are lyrics that go, "That gold is going to be mine. That gold is going to be mine. With a pistol in my hand, I'm going to get it where I can. That gold is going to be mine." Well, they make it sound easy, but now we know we can't just extract gold from the ground with a pistol. No, no, no. It's much more difficult. We need to see if it's economically feasible, if the technology is adequate enough for operations, and if we can hurdle over government regulations. We also need to consider the subdivisions of mineral resources and mineral reserves to see if that gold is viable enough to recover. This has been the Workings of the Townships with me, Shelby, and if you have any comments or questions or knowledge about the resource industries of the townships and you would like to share your information, please email me at theworkingsofthetownships@gmail.com, workingsofthetownships@gmail.com. I hope you enjoy this song and have a great week. Till next time.
Baby wants a diamond ring. My baby wants a diamond ring. I can't afford that diamond no more. My baby wants a diamond ring. String of pearls, but baby wants a string of pearls. Get on that track and make them dollars fast. My baby wants a string of pearls. My baby wants a string of pearls. That gold is gonna be mine. Mama, mama. William had a stash, I'm told. William had a stash, I'm told. So I went to his place with my pistol and my grace. Oh, William had a stash of gold. Oh, William had a stash of gold. Baby wants a diamond.
wants a diamond ring. Baby wants a diamond. Baby wants a diamond. Baby wants a diamond. Baby wants a diamond.